Rutherford County, Tennessee, is known for its rich Civil War history and stories. But deep within the county lies another kind of story. The story of the disappearance of a member of a prominent Rutherford County family. His murder, and an alleged murder-for-hire plot that's questioned to this day. This is the mystery of the murder of Russell Jones. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight. And I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine. All right. All right.
Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring historical mysteries and legendary figures of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. Rutherford County, Tennessee, was founded around 1803. Its location, just between Nashville and Chattanooga, made the county a highly contested area during the Civil War. One of the bloodiest battles in the Western theater, the Battle of Stones River, was fought in this county that's steeped in war stories, including that of Sam Smith from Smyrna, Tennessee. The 21-year-old was captured and hanged when it was revealed he was a Confederate spy. His family home is a historic site that folks stop by when they're traveling the Civil War trail through Rutherford County. Some notable folks were once Rutherford Countyans, including Sarah Childress, the future First Lady, thanks to her marriage to James Polk, country music's Uncle Dave Macon, educator and civil rights activist Mary Ellen Vaughn, and NASA astronaut Ray Seddon. And then there's the Jones family. They're not celebrities, but they are one of the most recognizable and respected families in Rutherford County. Jennings Andrew Jones served as mayor of Murfreesboro in Rutherford County from 1955 to 1964. Jennings' grandson, who was named after his grandfather, is the current county DA. Jones' son, Ransom, serves as the chairman of the Rutherford County Election Commission and was once the chairman of the Rutherford County Republican Party. The families worked hard to do a lot of good for the county. Jennings Andrew Jones, along with his wife Rebecca, founded the Rebecca Jones Foundation. The charitable foundation provides unique and challenging learning opportunities for children. The foundation grew and expanded over the years, has helped start a few programs in the county, including their local Crime Stoppers. You know that saying, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree? Well, in some cases, it falls very, very far away. As was the case of one member of the Jones family. His name was Russell. He was the son of Jennings and Rebecca Jones. But Russell didn't quite follow in the footsteps of the rest of his family and their respected name in Rutherford County. Things spiraled out of control, and in June of 1984, Russell Jones went missing, remained missing, until a man called the Crime Stoppers line, the very line that was established thanks to the Jones Foundation. The informant called in a tip to police that he knew where Russell Jones was. 36-year-old Russell Jones was buried in a makeshift grave in Murfreesboro. Russell Jones attended Vanderbilt University. A few years after he graduated, Russell took ownership of the Jones family meatpacking business, Jones Locker, in Murfreesboro. Russell hired Michael Lampley, a Middle Tennessee State University student, to help him at the meat locker. Russell Jones and Michael Lampley became close friends. Jones trusted Lampley, confided in him about his money and legal troubles. Russell had been married to Christina. Together they had two daughters, but the relationship went sour. They divorced in 1981. Divorce is always complicated, but the division of assets in this divorce points to one reason the marriage ended. Russell had been awarded his company, Jones Locker, and a few other assets. He was also awarded a California condominium he had bought for his lover and their illegitimate child. Christina was awarded full custody of their two daughters, and Russell was ordered to pay monthly child support and alimony payments. Russell Jones had two families to support. He was in a tricky financial situation that was leading to personal and legal complications, further complicated by his business dealings. In 1983, Jones told his friend Michael Lampley that he needed to rearrange some of his monies since he was in debt to his ex-wife because he was late on child support and alimony payments. Lampley graduated from college that year and was able to work out a deal to buy Jones' locker from Russell. He hired Alan Hawkins, who, despite his prison record, proved himself to be Lampley's best employee, the one he could always rely on. After selling to Lampley, Russell Jones left town for a while. It's believed he was spending time in California with his lover and their child. By February of 1984, Russell's ex-wife Christina filed a complaint with the court. The complaint cited Russell's child support delinquency. The two would end up in a nasty battle over the delinquent child support payments and the now delinquent alimony payments, totaling around $45,000. The court ordered a hearing on the matter for June 11th of 1984. Russell Jones appeared in court for that hearing in Murfreesboro, and that day, June 11th, 1984, would be the last day Russell Jones was seen alive. Russell's family and friends didn't know he was missing until a few days after the hearing in June. They made every effort to contact him, but heard nothing back. The family reported Russell missing and reached out to a former FBI agent, hired him to help in the search. Russell's car was found at the Nashville airport, which led investigators and the family to theorize Russell had returned to California. Once they learned he wasn't there with his family, the concern began to grow that something was seriously wrong. Russell Jones' father, Jennings, spoke with local media, and in an interview with the Daily News Journal, he said it seemed as though his son had literally disappeared. No trace to be found. Jennings was quoted as saying, "Everybody has enemies. I don't think of him as having enemies that would want to do this to him. It could have been an argument where somebody just got hot." You know, no one can love you like your family and see past what others see. Some of the business owners who worked in the area near Jones' Locker in Murfreesboro told the Daily News Journal that a lot of people didn't like Russell, and they knew he rubbed a few people the wrong way. The Tennessee Bureau of Investigation took the missing person case in July of 1984. They had very few leads. Russell Jones was missing for a little over 4 months when an informant called in a crucial tip to Crime Stoppers, telling police that he could lead them to the grave of Russell Jones. The tipster, none other than Michael Lampley, the man who had purchased Jones' locker from Russell Jones. Michael Lampley consulted his attorney before he called Murfreesboro police. He then called in that tip about Russell Jones being buried near the slaughter pens behind Jones' locker. On October 29th, 1984, word spread around town that something was going on behind Jones' locker. There, investigators worked to find Russell Jones' remains. They set up floodlights and used flashlights as they searched that night. Eventually, they found what they were looking for. In a small space between two thick rock walls, they found a body stuffed in a sleeping bag, wrapped in plastic, and secured with duct tape. In the grave with Russell Jones, investigators also found what they referred to as a blood-spattered butcher smock, a shoulder harness, and a .357 Magnum handgun. The Rutherford County coroner performed an autopsy and found three shots from a large caliber pistol had killed Russell Jones, two shots to the chest, one in the wrist. Rutherford County sent Russell Jones' remains to Nashville, where pathologists determined that Michael Lampley's tip to police that Russell Jones had been buried for months was indeed true. Investigators worked to piece together the motive for this crime. How and why had Russell Jones ended up dead and buried behind Jones' locker? During the course of their interviews, they spoke to a witness who had seen a backhoe digging a hole behind the business in June of 1984. It was later determined that the area where the backhoe had been digging was the very area where investigators found Russell Jones' body. Investigators believed Russell Jones had been murdered, then hidden in a freezer at Jones' locker until the makeshift grave had been arranged. When authorities met with Michael Lampley to question him about how he knew what he knew about this grave, they heard a story that was more complicated than anyone could have imagined. As Lampley told it, Russell Jones' life ended because the contract killer Russell hired to kill his ex-wife decided to back out of the deal. In his interviews with investigators, Michael Lampley told a bizarre tale of a murder-for-hire plot set in motion by Russell Jones. Lampley said that in late 1983 into early 1984, Russell Jones began voicing his anger over his financial problems. He blamed his ex-wife Christina for his financial bind. Jones told Michael Lampley that he wanted to hire someone to kill Christina. At first, Lampley thought it was a joke, but he said the more Russell Jones talked about it, the more he normalized it in his mind. In time, he justified it and asked his employee, Alan Hawkins, if he'd be willing to help Russell Jones with this problem. When Lampley approached Hawkins in April of 1984, he asked him if he would be willing to kill someone for Jones. He said he lied to Hawkins, telling him there was a lot of money in it for him if he killed the guy Russell Jones wanted dead. There was a negotiation over price for the killing, and in time, the men came to an agreement for contract killing. Hawkins claimed he agreed to the kill, but hadn't planned to kill anyone. He said he agreed in the hope that he could play Jones and Lampley against each other and walk away with a lot of cash. Michael Lampley and Alan Hawkins would both tell investigators that at the time the deal was made, the victim was not named. Russell Jones gave Michael Lampley $15,000 to hold on to. Lampley claimed it was payoff money that he was very uncomfortable holding on to, so he returned it to Jones. At that time, Jones gave Lampley $5,000 to hold on to as a down payment for the contract killing. He also gave him a .357 Magnum and bullets for the killing. A second payment of $5,000 would be made once the hit was carried out. Lampley, Hawkins, and Jones met in May of 1984 to go over Russell Jones' plan for Hawkins to gain access to Jones' ex-wife and carry out the murder, telling him where Christina would be and when she would be vulnerable and alone. Hawkins said the meeting took a turn for the worse when Russell Jones offered a bonus if Hawkins would be willing to mutilate his ex-wife. Hawkins would always claim that when he learned he was supposed to kill a woman, Jones' ex-wife, he became very uncomfortable with the arrangement. Michael Lampley arranged a final meeting with Alan Hawkins and Russell Jones on June 11, 1984. The men met in Michael Lampley's office at Jones' locker. Lampley would claim he left the room and was soon called back by Alan Hawkins, who had shot and killed Russell Jones. Hawkins claimed he had argued with Russell when he told him he refused to kill a man's ex-wife. He offered to return the down payment to Jones and call it even, just walk away. Alan Hawkins maintained that Russell Jones became enraged, began throwing things, kicking furniture in the room, and threatening to kill Hawkins. Hawkins had come to the meeting with the .357 Magnum Russell Jones had supplied. It was in his belt that day. He would tell investigators he freaked out when Russell Jones became enraged. He pulled out the gun and just started shooting at Jones. That's when he called Lampley back into the room. Alan Hawkins and Michael Lampley lifted Russell Jones' body onto a cart and moved the body into an adjoining room. Lampley would explain to investigators that he assumed Hawkins would call police, would explain the shooting had been self-defense, that Hawkins never planned to kill Russell Jones. The day after Russell's murder, Lampley and Hawkins came into work at Jones' locker and just did their job, went about work as if nothing had happened the night before. as if Russell Jones wasn't there in the building, dead. Alan Hawkins confessed to driving Russell Jones' car to the Nashville airport in an attempt to make it look as though Russell had left town. He then waited a few days, got a backhoe operator to dig the grave, telling the operator that it was for a new blood pit for the slaughterhouse at Jones' locker. That backhoe operator had no idea he was digging a man's grave. Alan Hawkins claimed Michael Lampley helped him dump Russell Jones' body into the grave in the middle of the night. Michael Lampley would wait 4 months before calling in his tip to police because he said he kept hoping Hawkins would come forward, tell police the truth about what happened the night Russell Jones died. But Alan Hawkins had fled the state with his wife and child. In October of 1984, Michael Lampley would say his conscience weighed so heavy on him that he confessed everything to his lawyer, called in the tip to the Crime Stoppers line, and arranged to meet with the district attorney. Within 3 weeks of the discovery of Russell Jones' body, Alan Hawkins was arrested in Colorado, where he had been living. He was extradited, charged with first-degree murder and illegal disposal of a body. He would also be charged with conspiracy to solicit murder. Michael Lampley was charged for being an accessory after the fact, and he was also charged with conspiracy to solicit murder. Alan Hawkins pleaded guilty to killing Jones in March of 1985. He was sentenced to 18 years for all three charges. That same month, Michael Lampley pled guilty and was sentenced to 6 years in a county workhouse. He was eligible for release after a year and 10 months. Michael Lampley later appealed his sentence, arguing that his cooperation with authorities should have led to a sentence of probation. During the hearing, Michael Lampley took the stand and testified, breaking down in tears as he shared that he had suffered greatly since the murder of Russell Jones, had lost his business, and been humiliated. Russell Jones' father, Jennings Jones, testified at that hearing, saying Michael Lampley should go to prison, serve his sentence, saying, "You can have a suspended sentence when you have no victim or public hurt. I think this is a very lenient sentence for the seriousness of the crime." Jennings Jones continued by saying that the family had gone through hell since June 11, 1984, when the slaying occurred. They hadn't known whether Russell was dead or alive. Michael Lampley's appeal was denied. Throughout the court proceedings for Hawkins and Lampley, the Jones family maintained they never believed Russell would put a contract on his ex-wife's life. No family wants to believe someone they love could do a thing like that. But the people we love can shock us, prove themselves to be unlike anything we could imagine. Russell Jones completed his will and a trust agreement in 1981. According to an article in the Tennessean on February 13th of 1985, Russell was deep in debt when he died, but he had a $1 million life insurance policy. His will stated that his estate be equally distributed to his three children, two children with his ex-wife Christina, one child from a previous relationship. In early 1985, the woman Russell was in a relationship with at the time of his death, who lived in California and had one child, well, she filed a lawsuit in an attempt to gain a share of Russell Jones' estate on behalf of her daughter. And here's where we learn a little more about Russell Jones. In filing the lawsuit, documents from Russell's estate were entered into court records and revealed a rather unusual provision. In these documents, Russell Jones wrote the following: that his children should receive nothing from his estate should they ever marry or cohabitate with a person or persons of African or Hispanic descent, or become a Yankee, reside north of the Mason-Dixon line, or marry or cohabitate with a Yankee or a homosexual. You can understand how a man who would include a provision like this in his last will and testament may have rubbed some people the wrong way while he was among the living. The life and death of Russell Jones is a complicated and twisted story. He was either killed during an argument that got out of control and his killers made up a murder-for-hire story, or Russell Jones was killed because he went to a dark place, took out a contract on the life of his ex-wife, and in a twist he could never see coming, that contract cost him his life. Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. Special thanks to Middle Tennessee Mysteries, a true crime website by veteran journalist Michelle Willard that's dedicated to raising awareness about notorious cold cases and infamous crimes in Tennessee. A Southern Mysteries listener reached out and suggested I feature the Russell Jones story here on the show. Michelle's feature on the case was a resource for this episode. You can learn more about Tennessee crime she's covering at MiddleTennesseeMysteries.com. You'll find a link to her website and more about this episode in the show notes at SouthernMysteries.com. If you are new to Southern Mysteries, welcome. If you've enjoyed listening to the show, I'd appreciate it if you could help other folks discover Southern Mysteries and help me to be able to produce more episodes. And there are a few ways you can do that. If you've already subscribed, make sure you rate and review Southern Mysteries in your player and share this episode on your social media accounts so people know you like it. Another really easy way to help me continue to create Southern Mysteries is by listening in the free Radio Public app on iOS or Android. When you listen there, I get paid and the money goes directly towards the cost of hosting this podcast. The folks at Radio Public have made it easy for you to directly support Southern Mysteries from within their app. You can also tap the tip button on my podcast page and leave me a one-time tip for any amount. Start listening with a free app today when you search for Radio Public in your app store. Radio Public also does a wonderful job of curating podcast playlists so you can discover new shows. One of my favorite lists is their Indies to Watch list. If you love supporting independent podcasts like Southern Mysteries, it's a really easy way to find some great shows you may otherwise miss. Check it out on Radio Public. Thanks for listening.